I want to welcome Agile XRM to the podcast. I've known the people at Agile XRM for the past 12 years. I've seen how their business process management tool can add massive value to complex organizational processes in sectors such as finance and government. If you have complex processes or a need for dialogues on the Power Platform or Dynamics 365, take a look at how this BPM tool can add value. You can find them at agilexrm.com or check out the show notes for more details. Welcome to the Power Platform Show. Thanks for joining me today. I hope today's guest inspires and educates you on the possibilities of the Microsoft Power Platform. Now, let's get on with the show. Hey, welcome everybody to the podcast today. We have finished with our humor. We're now going to get super serious. Why don't we just go around the room and do a quick introduction? Who's who here today? Chris, why don't you start?
What's up? I'm Chris. I'm the Director of Innovation at ANS, and I quite like AI and low-code a little bit, a lot.
Nice. Andrew.
Hey, everyone. This is Andrew. I'm the CTO for Cloud Services at Microsoft partner called HSO, and we are this crowd here has been doing amazing work with ecosystem architecture and helping people get strategic with the Microsoft Cloud, so great to be here again.
I love it. I love it. Anna.
Hi, I'm Anna. I've recently joined Will, and I am now a solutions director for the company that he's being a CTO at. Jesus, that was a lot. So I'm very happy to be here. I also like AI and data and other things as well.
I love it. Mr. Dorrington.
Hi, I'm William Dorrington. I'm the CTO at Curve Digital, but now Anna's joined. It's only a matter of time before she becomes the CTO at Curve Digital and I become her assistant.
I love it. And I'm your host, Mark Swith, otherwise known as NZ365 guy. Laugh. And today we're going to be talking about data and how it is the gold of everything ecosystem, AI, and the future. And so with that, I was thinking, Andrew, why don't we open with your thoughts on the subject?
So I think that the topic for today, right, it's really driven by this scenario, right? And many, many folks who are listening have probably seen this or been involved with this, right? So you sit down and you are architecting across a cloud ecosystem in an organization. And what do you have? What is the center of the diagram? It's a stupid app, right? And I think that one of the big challenges that people have taking cloud technology big across an organization and really thinking with an ecosystem mindset is that they take their favorite app, their favorite solution. It might be a big app, right? And they stick it in the center, like that's the sun and everything else revolves around that one app. It might be ERP, it might be CRM. But that's wrong, right? That's increasingly, a dead end because data is the center of your ecosystem, your ability to integrate it, to store it, to use it, to derive value from it. And that I think is the lesson for today. So guys, go. What do you see?
It amazes me that people don't think about data as being the omnipresent, omnipotent deity of any diagram when it comes to tech or to organizational enablement in general.
Would you say that's a deity in a diagram or a deity in a diagram? What would you...
I'll leave that one down to the audience.
I'm sorry.
but the reason why I say that is because everything we do within technology is either to get data in a validated way, report data back out, or store data or churn it in one manner. Everything else is just, you know, a method to do one of those few things. But at the end of the day, everything comes down to data. It's a bit like everything comes down to atoms, you know, and it always amazes me that people don't move to looking at their data quality, you know, their data aggregation as their key milestone, their key foundational stone of their entire technology strategy. I just want to get that out there while I stay awake.
When organizations think about data and they think they have their data or they have their data in a digital format and that it's accessible and things, and then all of a sudden you point out that, you know, one organization I'm working with at the moment, a very large enterprise customer, and you find that they have got so much data sitting in file shares on their network that are non-connected. And I'm talking about it, stuff as simple as spreadsheets and, you know, databases from whatever point solution they might have. And they think they have their data accessible, but of course it's at a department level. It's not like people in the organizations don't even know some of this data exists, and it's data that they need. And I was reminded of a guy that was working for a major car manufacturer. I heard the story, and his job and his team's job was to do collision testing on a single model of car. And just to look at the data on how, I think it was just like a front fender stood up under certain impact conditions. And he was only stuck with his model, and he found a data set showing all the models of cars this manufacturer did, tapped into it, and found that with that data, that wider data set, they could bring up patterns of failure points much quicker than just the single departmental data. And guess what his manager said? No, your job is just to stick with our model, right? And what I took from that is that, yeah, how many organizations have much larger data sets, but it's not available in your team or it's not accessible? You don't even know they exist. And therefore, you're losing or not getting the full picture of the art of the possible for your organization or making benefits from that. Because the outcome of that story was that once they tapped into that data set, the cost savings for the organization was phenomenal, because so many departments were just doing the same thing just for a different product line or a product set. And the collective data was so much powerful than the individual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I don't know. Do you guys find this, that you come across a lot of organizations that they fundamentally don't understand their data landscape?
I see a lot of people look at data and they see it as an impediment, because they want to build that app, the app in the center. So they'll be like, oh, we need to do a data migration, whatever. And that's like a tiny little point. And then every time you go and do like a status check, or you're trying to actually move the needle in any sort of way that counts, they're like, okay, whatever. How do we get to that app? Like, they don't care really about the data or what sort of data they've got. Or if you point out that, oh, look, that department actually has something that you could use for your app, they're only mildly interested, as long as it's super quick. Okay, what are the quick wins? Are the things that I'm hearing a lot, or yeah, that I've been hearing for a long time. So yeah, data is just like an annoyance in the they're like, whatever, but I wanna try Copilot.
That statement makes me immediately angry.
Yeah.
No, genuinely, that statement makes me immediately angry. Like, I'll tell you why, right? I have this discussion with our team a lot internally, and I say to them, and customers actually, and I say, okay, folks, what is the number one reason an app, and I'm using the term app on purpose here, so we'll use the term from Steve Mordew, a shitty little app. What is the reason a shitty little app or an app gets booted out of production? Like, what is the primary reason something gets taken out of production? Okay. It's data. The second primary reason is security. Okay. InfoSec will never pass something that's got PII, or should never pass something that's got PII, okay, that lives in a terrible data structure. So I'm like, you can have the app as the center of your diagram as much as you want, and do the look and feel and the CSS and do all the wiffly piffly visibility bullshit that people do in apps and do the wonderful UX. But if your data is terrible, that app is bullshit, and it'll never make it through to a productionized scenario. So congratulations, do all the UX and UI you want. It will never be productionized. Well done. You've wasted all of our time, right? And that's something that happens everywhere we go. So we had to implement a data strategy internally called the data up approach. and we live and die by it. Somebody came to our company recently and said, we need this thing built on SharePoint. We said, absolutely not. That was our answer straight off the bat. We won't do it. And it's because we have respect for our data so much. I'll go on another rant on this later, but like, I just feel as if people disrespect the information they have in their business. And because they disrespect the information through whatever it is, lack of knowledge or whatever, they disrespect themselves and the business.
I do feel like you took this question and like you punched it in the face. It really upset.
It makes him angry.
Even the whiffly piffly part.
Truly infuriates me. Like, I wish you guys knew how angry I get, right? Because there's so many of these developers and UX people spending time piffling about with the front end when nobody's thought about actually what data they're talking to. So like I've seen a data breach happen live in front of my eyes, right? Like it literally happened in front of me, not any of my kit, by the way, somebody else's. And I'm like, well, there we go. Well done. Congratulations. And it's great because you just spent $100,000 on making a front end, but didn't take any care about your data and security, which is actually the thing that matters.
But the key thing here, and just to sum up some of the wider podcast conversations we've having, it goes back to that, you know, tyranny of the deliverable again, where they're so focused on that one part of the app. They don't have a data strategy underneath. They don't think about it because a line of business gone off and has engaged a supply and said, I just want this app built. They grab all that data. Maybe it's all validated. Maybe it's trustworthy data, but it just sits on its own and adds to the siloed, segregated, dispersed data sets in a really shitty data landscape that you can never use again. And it all then goes back to everything Chris has just said, which is then that app is built in a bad way and it just magnifies the issue. Because not only do you have dispersed data, you then have dispersed shit data that you can never use.
And you spent all of your customers' money. Very important. It's done. The money is gone. There's nothing more.
There we go. That's what I wanted. Will said tyranny of the deliverable, and I say thumbs up. Come on. There we go.
Dude, honestly, but don't worry, guys. You have a really pretty front end with CSS and GIFs and SVGs. All will be fine because that's all you need is a Canvas app to solve all of your problems.
That's not the UXers' problem or fault, actually, because the UX designer and developer, they have their purpose, and it's great that they're doing a great job.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, look at Andrew right now. He wouldn't be having so much fun without a UXer.
A lot of user research has gone into that, mainly just for
Right,
Andrew.
Exactly. Like, have you seen anyone who's using it? That stuff has been live for months. He's got
the thing is, it's, you know what it is, right? I'll tell you what it is. It's the fault of the process and the people defining the process who think that it's a wonderful idea to start with your screens and work down to data. I'm like, why?
It's our lack of being consultants. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. Do you know why? It's because we know how to do what we know how to do, and we will recommend that and not go beyond it. And when someone speaks up like Mark's friend and they're like, dude, we're going to save so much money, our results are going to be so much better. Unfortunately, there are sometimes barriers to create that. So we go back to, I love it when my husband takes me seriously.
You said we're going to make so much money, and I thought that deserved fireworks.
Can we just have to accept that Andrew likes playing with this gadget he's got?
All right, I'm done. I'm done for now.
But then you still do what you can do or what you know how to do, and that's how you end up starting with the UX or with whatever and never with the data. And the customer has a responsibility there as well. As a customer, I think is not super responsible to say, I've got whatever, let's just say £5 million, not New Zealand dollars. Sorry, Mark.
That means they have 20p.
Monopoly money.
But like, build me something, and then like you sort of go away and not understand or point out the fact that you want your data to be healthy. Like, it's the customer's responsibility there as well, in my opinion.
What was in Andrew's burrito? What was in Andrew's burrito he ate before this?
I think this is the New Zealand one. This is a New Zealand one.
$5 note.
Yeah. Australia, same queen, just worse money, you know.
Thank you for tuning in to the Ecosystems Podcast. Today we're talking about currency.
Currency.
I've got a whole envelope full of it. We got some Swedish, Polish, British. Anyway, sorry.
Hey, that's a type of useful data, right? You know when you use that money and how to use it.
That is true. That is true.
Well done for trying to rescue that.
Yeah. Well, so something, Anna, that you said earlier, that got me thinking about this.
Really? Whilst you were doing this?
Yes, I'm back to being serious. We had to enliven things a little bit. But so several of us, in fact, I do believe four of the five of us, because one of us couldn't be bothered to come to South Coast Summit. We were at South Coast Summit.
Lazy.
We were at South Coast Summit so that we could see Chris Huntingford receive an award.
Yes.
In a penguin suit.
It was sort of a penguin suit.
Ah, it wasn't really.
Which, fun fact, since you brought it up, there are penguins on the New Zealand $5 note. Bring all the pieces back together.
Do you know that those penguins live at the beach, literally 1K from my front door?
Really? Wow.
Go there right now.
Hang on. I'll just get my drone out and send it.
There we go. I mean, this would be quite the added extra.
Yeah, I mean, this is no one bargained for
this. I've never done live streaming from the drone before, but let's do it now.
What are they, you know, when this goes into editing, I mean, what are they going to do with this segment? So we were at South Coast Summit a few weeks back, and one of the conversations that, yes, I'm going to go there. One of the conversations that it still is mind blowing to me that we are having is about licensing. Right. And about, I'm thinking specifically right now, Power Platform licensing, because most of the rest of the Microsoft world is on ACR, but fine. But in any case, this conversation around licensing, and then there was an email that I saw flying around recently, basically complaining that SharePoint was insufficiently feature rich as a database, right? Like, Microsoft, why have you made this lousy database called SharePoint? And I wanted to just berate this person when I read this. But the point is that, you know, I see people out there using technology like Power Platform, and they're skipping, when you don't buy the license, right? You're skipping actually the most powerful part of the whole platform, right? We want to have all these conversations about Copilot and about AI in your apps. But to me, the real power of this thing is Dataverse, and the fact that when you standardize your app development on Dataverse, you're bringing all of these, as Steve Mordeau would say, shitty little apps. You're bringing them all in from the cold. You're getting all of that data into a transactional data service that is one hop via the lake, one hop away from being accessible to AI workloads or to analytical workloads run through Synapse, for example. So, you know, it's just mind blowing to me that we're in late 2023 still having an argument or a debate about why someone doesn't want to pay for a proper data service when that is the most powerful part of the technology.
Yeah. And it's not new, because you know that Bill Gates, when CEO of Microsoft, saw Dynamics, MSCRM back then, and saw the way the data set work, et cetera, and the model driven nature of creating solutions. He was like, we've already got SharePoint. Why are we even investing in this? Right. So he, in fact, I understood he even used expletives in that quote as into why was an engineering team investing? And this is, I think, when Satya was actually leading product development for business applications. So it's not a new thing, but interesting. You talk about full, you know, why are people still talking about this? I just had a guy on my team come to me this week and say to me that a customer asked for XYZ solution. Obvious fit. They're already a Dynamics customer, obviously fit with the Power Platform from a Dataverse perspective. On that call was one of our internal SharePoint gurus. Oh, we can build all this in SharePoint. And I'm just like, how many times in my career have I heard that? Without an understanding what the customers required, a fair level of security around this data set and the default, and which is my question to you guys, what are your top three answers to somebody that's normally within your own organization, that's normally the SharePoint guru, that says that kind of statement, oh, we could just build this all in SharePoint, it's cheaper?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, absolutely not.
I will fight you in the road. I will fight you in the road,
bro. I'm not even joking. So actually, I say to people all the time, I'm like, do you hate your data and your business that much? Like, so the thing is that SharePoint, okay?
Yeah.
It's designed for data sharing, not data locking down, right? So I'm like, okay, so when you are a dumbass and you put all your private data in SharePoint, what the fuck do you think is going to happen? Okay. People are going to share it with everyone else.
I'm never going to be able to say this without the intonation. Share.
Share. It's so ridiculous. I can't do it. Eh?
This is what I love about the way Chris says things.
The thing is, though, I keep trying to tie it back to the other podcast we have, which is that sphere of understanding. So if you only have a hammer, everything's going to look like a nail, right? And that's why if they only know SharePoint, they know nothing else. They're just going to want to push that. And you know what? I still have clients all the time just because they don't want to pay for the licensing. And then you end up getting into positions of absolute madness. Oh, go on, Chris. If you push through with that, and I'll tell you some of the stuff that I've dealt with.
No, this is important, right? Because this licensing thing, I would like to show you a comparison, if I may.
Yeah, bring it up.
But you never know where it's going with Chris. Is it Batswatch versus?
It is always Batswatch versus. It is the Batswatch licensing guide 101. Okay, Power Platform licensing for premium is way more expensive than everyone else. Okay, dipshit, go to Salesforce and look at their per app license, okay? Mm-hmm. And look at their extended license. We are $5, they are $25. We are $20, they are $100, okay?
These are real dollars?
Yeah. There's a USD. Oh, euros here, euros.
Okay, so you can create some apps for 50 euros a month, okay? But look at their standard price, and everywhere is get a quote. Like Mendix Cloud is basically get a quote, right? Build Mission Critical, get a quote. That means it's not going to be cheap. We are $20 per user per month before negotiation. Look at OutSystems.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
You should always fear the get a quote, right? Like
When I was
planning our honeymoon, right? And I wanted these nice resorts and things, and they never had a price. And I was like, why would I even bother?
Yeah.
You got to sell your soul to the salesman down the phone. That's pretty much what that is.
Yeah.
Sign in blood. Just here, please.
You're so right. As in this software that we're recording on, I pay, I don't know, let's say I pay $25 a month, right? And I've used it for 2.5 years.
Did you get a quote for that?
No. So there's new features that they've introduced and they're like, get a quote, right? I'm like, okay. And so guess what a get a quote was? An appointment was booked with me. And a guy comes on and, you know, has this meeting with me.
Bit of razzle dazzle. Yeah.
And guess what? The next tier was $4,500 a month. Like, 25K? Are you serious? Like,
but what do you mean? I mean, what features are you getting for that jump?
Why don't you just qualify me out, right? Why don't you qualify me out? You wasted a call on somebody that obviously. I am not Microsoft and going to drop coin. Like, I'm not an enterprise organization. This is just a hobby for me. And you go from 25 to 4,000? Like, what a stupid, Yeah.
But Mark, surely the reason that you have this perspective is because you, for most of your career, I'm sure like all the rest of us here, we've worked with very, very competent salespeople who are very skilled at qualifying things out, and they have never wasted your time getting on a bullshit call.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I've got a meme for that. That's awesome.
That happens in all industries. So, and about the, if you're a hammer, every problem's a nail. So
every problem's Mark Smith. I only have $25. What can I get? Yeah.
looks like I'm going into podcasting.
Yeah.
So in our house, not the one that we've moved into, but the old one that got flooded and is now rented out anyway. It got fixed first before being rented out.
We got this family living in a flood.
Like the family's doing well. Anyway, we've got this smart meters system put in. It's a, for everyone who's dialing into us, this is like a very UK thing.
No, we have them in New Zealand too. They got from the colonies out. They got out to the colonies. Yeah, we have smart metering.
I thought Mark was just saying, no, we don't have anyone dialing in.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you didn't need them in New Zealand, Mark, as all of your energy is clean and pure and nice. We need to pay big money for the oil.
You've watched the tourism lies.
I just sort of assumed you had a geothermal vent in your living room. That was, yeah. And that's how you...
Exactly. So we have these smart meters, right? So, and the smart meters desynchronized when we changed the Wi-Fi system, and the new tenants, they cannot set it up. So I could have gone and set the whole thing up myself. But then, you know, Mark Smith's voice was just in my head telling me that I should not do this if I can pay for someone to go and do it. Here I am trying to find a person to go and do it.
Also, it's worth pointing out that she was in Australia at the time, just to be clear.
Yes. Person number one, I got a quote. He like calls me and stuff, and he's like, why don't you install this smart meter system? And I'm like, well, I have this other one that I'm telling you that needs to be synchronized. He's like, no, but you should use this other one. I'm like, I take it you do know, you have no idea about my smart meter system. And he's like, no, you should just install this one.
Maybe he was just trying to be a good consultant and not just take your orders verbatim. I don't know. I mean,
Person number two swears that they know about the smart meter, but the cost would be too small for them to come and fix it, therefore I need to do something else. So I'm like, fine, I'll do my servicing with you as well. So they do like a whole boiler servicing, and then I find out that they also don't know anything about my smart meter situation. Person number three, again, they recommend a different smart meter system, but not the first recommendation either. So like,
I feel like I should use this as therapy.
I am using it. But when we're talking about data and why aren't people doing it properly, if they get the same advice from consultancies like I did, then it's all so confusing. And then you get on the call with a Microsoft partner and you're like, I want to do everything. Like, I want some governance and compliance, and I want a good, I don't know, environment or landing zone strategy. And I want to take care of my data because I actually want to use AI.
Anna was raising a really good point there, though, which is because clients get into the space of thinking they're always trying to be upsold, and Microsoft are always so relentlessly pursuing the license sale, that whenever you actually say to them you need an increased license to really drive benefit and have this done properly, they just think that you're playing the charlatan or electric meter man or whatever your smart meter is. Yeah. So I can see where Anna's coming from there, that there is definitely a pattern of that as well.
Here's the other thing. I find that Microsoft folks themselves, sellers, get stuck on the pricing themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I was called in recently to speak to an organization on behalf of Microsoft because the ceded licenses from E3 and E5, they had squeezed that lemon that there was nothing left in it, right? They needed to go pro licensing. And the Microsoft guys were like, oh, we can't tell them. Like, so they bring me in to talk about, you know, why they need to go pro. It was quite clear. But the thing is that I've come from a world of Dynamics where the pricing was over $100 per user, right? And I see these prices for Power Apps and stuff, and I'm like, what is the problem, people? The value is so exponentially more what you get to what you spend, but they get fixated on these tiny price points because, you know, in any form of negotiation, it's what you reference against a price is what you set in your mind. And what happens here is that if you've come from a SharePoint and a kind of very freemium model, you know, $1 is expensive, you know, from free. Yeah. I mean, look at Elon. He's now saying that to X, he's going to charge everybody a fee to be on a social network. And people are like, whoa, you know, now it's like, and he's only saying it's $1 a year, but it's still people are like, and of course he's wanting to control the bots on the platform. And therefore, if they have to pay for every bot, that might be, but I can't see if someone's got a bot network operating, $1 seems pretty cheap for them to.
Very cheap. Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, if they're only, you know, back to the licensing point, if they're thinking they're paying, you know, the upper more premium plans and they're only seeing it as one solution and they're not looking at it in a more, you know, holistic way with all the different aspects, all the different solutions they can bring, then of course it's bloody expensive. But that's not how you see it. And I see that's also another thing that happens all the time, which is they don't look at the graduation curve of you're going to end up building in so much technical debt. You're going to have loads of these shitty little apps on a shitty, shitty database.
Oh, no.
Sorry, you can tell I'm very tired. So, you know, I on this awful, awful SharePoint list, and then all of a sudden, you're going to get to a point where you realize you're 7-8 solutions in. You're starting to see the value, and that's when you go, okay, yeah, we'll do it. And by then, you've got all that technical debt. You have to re-platform everything, and it is an absolute pain. This really is therapy. I'm enjoying this.
Yeah. Can I add something? Have any of you read the book Tools and Weapons?
Yeah, Brad Smith. Okay, yeah, I have. Yeah.
And so this quote stuck out to me, and I tried to search it online. I couldn't find it, so I actually opened the book and went back to where I highlighted it and said, "Well, data has always been important to society. It has never played the role it does today. Even when trade slows or economics falters, data continues to grow at a steady pace. Some say that data has become the oil of the 21st century. But that understates the reality. A century ago, automobiles, aeroplanes, and many trains ran on oil. Today, every aspect of human life is fueled by data. When it comes to modern civilization, data is more like the air we breathe than the oil we burn."
Oh, love that.
That's so powerful. Yeah.
I read that maybe, what, did he bring that book out maybe 5 years ago? So pre-AI, like the AI we know since, you know, November 30. Last year. But I love the visionary nature and what he was seeing that data. He was talking about some of the data around cancer and cancer research. And the problem is every cancer researcher is doing their own siloed thing, right? Because everyone's after the money for what the results, if they can solve the problem of cancer. But imagine if we had open data sets, and this is where a lot of that open thinking around data came about. And we started as a humanity, started sharing this kind of important data. And I know I'm digressing into a utopian world here, but the power that would bring. But if we bring it back to what we're talking about, I think that once again, organizations are not understanding the fundamental priority that they should be putting on data. It's more the air we breathe than the oil we burn is such a different way of thinking about how the life-giving nature to a business's health moving forward is on how they have that data.
A great example of that is, you must have heard of the Human Genome Project. I mean, that was groundbreaking for lots of people coming together to completely map the entirety of the human genome. You know, what the benefits we've got from that around sort of improved diagnosis of various genetic diseases, actually improved medicine, actually some of the groundbreaking RNA aspects of knowledge that then actually help with the whole COVID vaccine, regardless of your view on it, which is now helping implement other medicine, which has helped with CRISPR and all the genetic modification. I mean, huge. Just because we got together and created this connected, integrated data set that all the scientists contributed to. And, you know, half the issue we have in the UK and others is a lot of the public bodies and health organizations, such as the NHS, get so clingy to their own data that they don't want to share it for the common good. And that is just insane. Right. Yeah. I'm going to go to bed now. Catch you soon. Yeah. No,
<that's... laughs> but if you liken this back to any organization, right, it really does stem into how important this discussion as part of an ecosystem needs to be had and needs to be catalogued and understood. Do you really, and that leads into connectors and how you make data available and of DevSecOps around all that. Mm-hmm. How do you have these discussions when they're not in the scope of the delivery of the deliverables, right? That's not in the brief, so we're not focusing on that.
You know, that's something where I'll give some practical advice here, right? If you're a Microsoft customer, right? Or you're a customer of any cloud provider, and you go out and you have firms, you have consultancies, partners, whatever, come to you with proposals on how to do something, right? Toss them out of the room if they're not bringing you a compelling story about your data platform, right? And I see this all the time where, I see this across organizations, right? So where the customer will go out and they'll say, I need an app that does A, B, and C. And then you try to turn this into a responsible conversation, right, around what the data story looks like. And what you get is, oh, no, you're going to distract me from the app. You're going to distract. I don't want to be led down that path. You're just going to distract me from the thing that I really care about. And it goes back to what Chris said when we opened up, right? Like just that obsession with the app is really killing you, I think.
Hugely. So Andrew, I love the fact that you like toss them out of the room, right? So one of the things that I've started to learn is that. And this is why, like, I do get very passionate about it, and I do get a bit snotty as well. But, like, I'll tell you why, okay? So, Mark, the fact that you brought up that quote actually goes in perfectly in line with the way that I talk to organizations, perfectly. And I'm like, okay, guys, so look, why do you have data? Okay, the reason you have data is it's a digital representation of you and your company, okay? That's, like, the primary. So your core data structure is effectively a representation of you, your company, and the transactions you have with other people. Now, if you are so happy to treat that data with respect, with disrespect, and you're so happy to not care about it, you in effect are actually just doing that exact same, paying that exact same respect or disrespect to your organization, yourselves, and the people you're serving, right? And I know it's like a little bit sort of esoteric maybe, but I think it's bullshit and I hate it. Like if my data is stored in a terrible data structure, and somebody gets hacked, like I'm angry, right? Because they haven't paid my data respect. And I think that the way in which we design applications, power apps, let's use that as an example, and somebody is really stupid enough to store my information inside an Excel document on a desktop, like screw you, man. I'm going to remove my business from you straight away. And the way that I want my customers and the organizations I work with to treat data is with high respect. Yeah. And I tell people this, my words, I use these words legitimately on Friday last week at a customer. And I said, this is how it is, man. And Will's point about, you know, people like the NHS and them not sharing data, it's just selfish. And it's so money grubbing and money grabbing. And actually what organizations miss is the fact that they've got such an opportunity to make more money by sharing.
Another key point, and I was fortunate enough to meet, and this is another example, Chris, just to color what you're saying, but there's a genuine example that I'm sure they won't mind me sharing. Or if so, it's been lovely to know you and visit me in prison. I was fortunate enough to meet these really, really clever doctors. You know, all doctors are clever, but these are the guys that literally set the foundational baselines for a lot of the medicine within the UK. Very clever people. I sat there and I felt like they took me along to this dinner, and I think I was just the entertainment, quite frankly. You know, so they might as well dress me up in a little suit. And what they wanted to do, and they were being stopped from doing on some level because of the data sharing, was the fact that when it comes to oncology, so cancer, study of cancer, and working with cancer, our medicine's got so advanced now that it's not always the cancer that kills the patient that has it. It's actually the medicine starts affecting their heart before the cancer actually gets them, because the medicine makes you outlive, and then all of a sudden you have start having cardio events such as heart attacks and other factors. And I'm getting to my point here, but what they found is if they had all the data and they could start actually seeing what medicine started affecting people based on their vitals, so it'd come in all the time and have their heart checked, they'd have ECGs, they have blood pressures and that, they could soon get to a point where they could adjust the medicine in time so that actually it can sustain and keep the cancer at bay, but also ensure that they don't have any sort of cardio episodes that would cause a fatality. But because they're not allowed to access and aggregate loads of data from around the hospital, around Europe, around the UK, it wasn't able to go forward, and it's becoming a real issue. And it's things like that which make so much sense and will have so much benefit that we are literally cutting off our nose to spite our face at that point, which is just insane.
So let's talk about wars.
I mean, we are literally going through all the... Yeah.
For the same reason, right? It's like the stupidity of it, but people are there to make money on it, right? And they protect... There's... Yeah, it's horrible.
You're right, Mark. Very pertinent point. Yeah.
I think, though, for a long time, you know, it's easy now to assume malintent, right? Or maybe it's just easy to assume selfishness that... You know, selfishness that comes across as malintent, right? But listen, it's for a very long time, what we're talking about really wasn't possible, right? It was not necessarily technically feasible for data from different parts of an organization, to say nothing of data from different organizations, to be commingled in any sort of useful way, right? And that, I think, has changed, but it's changed very quickly. The technology has surely outpaced the ability of mindsets to change, right? So now we have the ability to, you know, say you had a number of different organizations and they were all kind of pursuing broadly the same mission. So we'll take, you know, the medical field, since we keep coming back to this, right? And they're going to have different applications, different systems, and some of that data is going to be kept in Dataverse, some of it's going to be kept in SQL, some of it might even be kept in SharePoint. You know, but it's going to be kept in different cloud providers, in different data storage technologies. And it's only very, very recently that it was achievable to say, direct all of that data downstream into a lake, secure it properly, govern that data properly, and then have the wherewithal to do something with it, right? So maybe we could have gotten it into the lake, or we could have gotten it into an acceptable commingling technology, but then what? Then what do you do with it? And I think that this is a huge, we often talk about data as being a prerequisite for AI, but I think there's another way to invert that and say AI gives us the ability to extract value and make sense of data at scale in a way that we couldn't have done previously, like very recently.
I think that's a great point, actually.
Yeah. I'm a bit worried about that, though.
Really?
Yeah, I'll tell you why. I say this to customers all the time. I'm like, AI is a loud hailer for shitty data, right? It really is. And what I found, okay, so do you remember when the low-code thing came around? Probably around 2015, I guess. And people were like, okay, you know.
No one here remembers that, Chris.
Yeah, well, you know.
What's low code?
You're low code. You're low code and low maintenance. Go to bed. No, I think people panicked about that, but
Chris's face is like a power app. It's a beautiful exterior, but there's no data behind it.
That's, and he's, yeah, and his back end's a mess.
My back end's a mess because of you, bro.
Because I shared my point.
What did we do before that we recorded this episode? Like,
oh, can't wait to integrate next to your backend.
I mean, Will spent the day hanging out with you, Anna. Will has spent more time with you today than I have. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I've enjoyed it. It was all buff board, by the way, Andrew, if I have to say those words.
So Chris was saying that what you said, Andrew, was a bit of BS. This is what he was saying.
Oh, I don't think it's BS. I think that you have to be careful, right? Because if you put the bad data and couple it with AI, it's like putting bad data with a Power BI report that's been shared with your entire business.
Well, it's shit in, shit out.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but I think that's exactly what Andrew's saying. He's saying, like, this is – so before
– yeah.
Or maybe it's not. That's just my opinion. So – whereas before, we used to say, oh, you need to categorize your data. You need to bring it all into a user, into a usable version of it. You need to have your PII data protected, et cetera, et cetera. But no one really understood the value because they were like, oh, you're asking me to spend a load of money and not get anything in return because guess what? I am still, you know, filling in my orders and signing contracts and sharing information and whatever. So where's the benefit? Whereas I feel like Andrew's saying, unless you categorize everything and you look at your data from a sensible point of view, you're not going to be able to, you're not going to be able to actually achieve anything with AI, like you're saying, crap in, crap out.
Okay, I got the opposite. I got the you need AI to help you with your data.
So I got a third part of that, and sorry, Andrew, let's jump in on this because it's an interesting part here. I got a slight third thing where I was typing actually to our good friend Cheryl Netley. So I only listened to the last thing you said, which is around actually getting, being able to access the amount of data you've got in a format that is actually consumable. And one thing that I think that large language models has allowed us to achieve, and if we ignore the business aspect of this right now and just talk about humanity as a whole and all the knowledge and articles and pages and journals and images and graphs and everything we have to really progress and move us on as a human race, as it were, to advance us in sciences, advance us in medicines and tech and everything else, we need large language models to really allow us to understand all the data we have, because it's impossible now for any one person to create reports and that, to understand everything that's there, to understand all the images and read it and digest it. Azure Cognitive Search was the closest we got to it, but that was only search. It wasn't actually interpretation. So sorry, Andrew, I don't know if that was the route you was going down.
That's exactly it. So let's take these sort of high flying, medical research, scientific, good of humanity examples. Those are great. And I think that's ultimately what we're driving towards. But let's make this a little more relatable, right? So, Anna and I just were on our honeymoon. We went to Bali and to Australia and to New Zealand because, you know, when you're far away, you certainly think, oh, Bali and New Zealand are close by one another, right?
You know, you can walk there at low tide, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, Mark, you might want to think twice about it, but I bet Will could. But I was thinking about when we were on this trip, I was thinking about something that Anna told me, which was that the pieces of the trip that she planned them with ChatGPT and Bing, right? And I took this to heart. One day we were sitting in Melbourne and I just pulled out my phone and I asked Bing, I said, hey, Bing, my wife and I are at, and I named the cafe we were sitting at. We have a flight in 5 hours. We need to go pick up our suitcases back from our hotel. This is where the hotel is. These are the things we're interested in. What should we do? And Bing just replied, and we went and did what Bing said, which yes, that might make us sheeple of the Bing. But the point is that what AI did there was it took a huge amount of information pertaining to what one should do in Melbourne. And it helped me to quickly be able to deal with that information. And what I was saying, a moment ago is that, you know, we think of data as being the necessary input to make AI work. And that's true. But saying it that way almost presupposes that AI is just having the AI is the goal. But having the AI is not the goal. The goal is to help humans be able to deal with massive amounts of data at scale. And I think that that's really where a lot of the value is here.
Yeah. And I assume, right, that somebody's going to create some AI to make sense of the garbage, right? As in to make sense of the data sprawl in organizations. So then that brings to the second point. It will only be able to do that if it has access to the data, right? To make sense of the wild west of how your data is pocketed and segmented and siloed all over the organization. So connectivity to those data sets, in other words, accessibility to those data sets are going to become increasingly important for AIs to then make sense, to categorize it and make it usable for the organization, find the trends, behaviors, patterns, etc., in those data sets.
But that's where Microsoft's Fabric will behave splendidly. In theory, at least, it can index and process any sort of garbage you may have from any sort of data source, Microsoft or otherwise. So unless you've got stuff just sitting on a server somewhere, so on-prem, if your data is on a computer with access to the internet, in theory, that can be ingested by Fabric and then used accordingly, in theory, at least.
Or any other good intelligent data platform like Palantir or others.
So this was a presentation that I gave at a conference recently. Basically, what we're showing here is on the left, you have a typical model for how AI acts on enterprise data. And then on the right, what I talk through, and I'm not going to do the whole talk with you here, but you know, basically this idea of getting your data into places that are accessible or addressable by AI. So in this diagram, in this example, we're thinking Azure SQL, OneLake, Data Lake, Blob Storage, and Cosmos DB. All of those data sources are indexable by Azure Cognitive Search. And then, you know, I think Dataverse has a really important role to play here because Dataverse is absolutely phenomenal as a transactional data service, right? So you're transacting data via an application. And the beauty of it is that it one hops into the lake. You just push or shortcut data from Dataverse into the lake. But I think that, you know, what organizations need to reckon with here is that much of their data is sitting in services that are not directly or indirectly accessible by AI, or incidentally by API management for secure distribution to, say, partner organizations or third-party applications. They're not directly accessible by, reporting and analytical tools, Synapse, Power BI, etc. So getting data into places, it doesn't all have to be consolidated down into one specific place, but getting data into a place where it is accessible and addressable by a data distribution. This is why we call it an ecosystem architecture, a data distribution neighborhood. It's that collection of services that then take the data that you have and create value from it, whether it's generative or reporting and analytical or some sort of data science workload, whatever. You have to be able to extract the data from a place where those tools can access it and use it.
I used your and Anna's awesome diagram again today with the data being accessible and whatnot. And I was talking about the application portfolio neighborhood. and how, like, you know, when the data gets passed through the integration neighborhood from the business applications neighborhood, I can't remember the name, but like, it's really interesting, right? Because basically every organization I'm working with right now, I'm saying to them, number one, we have to do things like architectural best practice, but number two, we actually have to talk about how to microservice your data and make it accessible. And like, one of the orgs I'm working with, their goal is to make their student records safely available. Okay. Now, we're lucky because the dude we're working with there, they've got a super strong CIO. Like, he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. And then it trickles down into their layers of like the low code team and their digital lead. And it's amazing. I know, Will, you met the guy. I'm just not going to say his name on the podcast, but it's interesting because I see the referenceability on like how to microservice data across the teams there at this organization. And it's amazing because they're like, we've got to make this data safely available. Yes, we've got this Power App-y stuff. Yes, we've got this AI stuff. Yes, we've got a cool bot, but how do we microservice this stuff? So their top priority, one of their top priorities is to do that. And I showed them your diagram and I gave you guys kudos, by the way. So I referenced you both. And I said, this is how you do it. And they were like, this is awesome. Absolutely awesome. And it's true. Like, if you can microservice data, many of your other problems are going to be solved safely, microservice safely.
And the safety around it is still a concern for me, and it is a point of nervousness. And I sometimes can't tell nowadays whether that nervousness is something that comes from, you know, a place of I need to modernize my mindset. But I do think that the technology to generative AI and technology around business intelligence, analytics, those sorts of technologies that take the data and do something useful with it have actually outpaced our ability to reliably govern and secure that data. Now, I think that Microsoft is making huge investments in the ability to do that, but I think that we are still considerably, as long as I see people screwing with dataverse security roles, which I think are extraordinarily powerful, I will think that we are still pretty far off from a true enterprise one security model for your data. I know we're working hard on it, but it still keeps me up at night, right?
Okay, I will tell you something, Andrew. This will be interesting from a Microsoft perspective. So I love mucking around with the dataverse security roles. Like, it's my thing. I love it. I've been doing it for years. I've been trying to break everything and put it back together.
It's really strange.
Yeah, I can't help it. I got on a call with the Microsoft Fast Track Solution Architecture team. So we get on this call, and what I'd found was a way to basically mess with the security roles in such a way that I could like lock down elements and areas of the platform. And the dude said to me, the words that came out of their mouth was, "Chris, that is not in the spirit of the platform."
Which part was not in the spirit of the platform? Was it that you trying to break it, or no, the fact that it was broken? Which there's a very important distinction here.
They built this, you know that. They've released this environment routing thing, right? Okay. So yeah. I was like, cool. I don't like this thing. So I'd been doing this years before using, built an app / autom PBA. Then what it did is it asked the user a bunch of questions. Then what it did is, I will not use the maker role. I'm like, nope. Absolutely not. But the only three roles that give you access to the maker experience are environment maker, admin, and system customizer. They're the only three. However, if you pick up the actual GUID of the environment, you can route people to the environment without them having the role. So what you do is you copy the maker role and you can hack it, basically. So rip out a bunch of privileges. So you can actually stop people making flows, sharing apps, all sorts of things, and then route them to that environment. And that was not in the spirit of the platform.
Not in the spirit.
I'm hoping you're going to do a session at an upcoming conference on how to do it, demo.
Just call it spirit of the platform.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to. I've actually showed them. You know, I've showed people how to do it.
Yeah. I like it.
But at the same time, those security roles are just so complex that I'm seeing a lot of people just using the admin role, like all that work where they migrate a huge amount of data and then they can't figure out how security roles work because the matrix is so complex that they end up giving everyone an admin role just to make sure
it works, right?
Things work. So where does that complexity stop, or where should it stop, or is that one of the blockers? And that goes, it's not just the security roles, you know, it's all of the rules of governance and compliance and everything that we would like to adhere to. Is that prospect so scary that organizations would rather just push the can down the road and build a bunch of apps instead?
Organizations love kicking the can down the road. That is absolutely, if given the chance to kick a can down the road, they're going with it.
Yeah. We have to make it really difficult and really hard because that's the way we need to do things, because it's for free.
So spend all your money on the consultancy instead.
Yeah, bro. I don't know.
That is SharePoint development.
Yeah, it is. It's like, how many lines of PowerFX can we write here? In fact, it's a competition. Make as many lines of PowerFX as you can, and then make technical debt. In fact, you know what? Screw it. Like, let's just embed JavaScript. In fact, screw it. Let's just embed JavaScript in these SVGs, in these CSSs, and write all the things so that we can nest everything and then completely have all the debts because it's free. Literally, exactly. That made no sense, man. I'm getting tired.
Where do I sign?
No. And on that note, when we come back with the next episode, we'll seek practical guidance and practical advice for Mark will, but he didn't press us this time. Sometimes, you know, like we get really deep into theory, give me something practical, give me real advice. He didn't bother us this time.
Because Mark has a bunch of sleeping children.
Matt's not aware he's here.
Actually, let's just address the marmalade thing. Tell me, like, I didn't understand that. What was that all about?
What, the marmalade thing?
Yeah.
So this is going to be hard to explain. It's just a thing, right?
It's not really.
But Anti likes to mock the way the British speak. Okay.
Right.
So it came from MVP Summit a long time ago, where we got obsessed with the word lobby.
Lobby.
So we basically ran around asking people to say the word lobby. Mm-hmm. And Bibbs was like, can we meet in the lobby?
Yeah.
So that's where it started. And then we just started taking words like lozenger and marmalade.
Right.
and it just got to the point where he would message me randomly in the middle of the night screaming, marmalade!
I've had voice notes of Auntie saying lobby as well. I've never quite understood why.
See how important it was to bring this topic up, right? Because it's now more clarity.
I think the viewership of this podcast, once people find out that this podcast contains the explanation as to why Auntie Payunin messages you weird things.
Lobby.
Lobby. But the best is the one video he said he's got a butter knife, and you just see the front of the knife, and he's wandering around, and he goes to he's got a piece of toast, and he spreads the marmalade on the toast, stops and screams, marmalade, and just carries on. And no one that's in a group with me is like ever amused, and I'm like dying laughing because I think it's the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. He continues to do it and won't stop, and it's my favorite thing.
In other news, Anna, now that you're you no longer a blue badge.
Yes.
How long do you become an MVP?
I don't know. It depends on whether my good friends are ready to nominate me. To begin with,
you need to know an MVP, don't you?
You need to get
some good friends.
You need some good friends.
Right. But you know what? It takes 12 months. This is what I'm hearing. It takes 12 months. So,
you know, you're doing such amazing speaking sessions at events around this whole ecosystem piece. I think that definitely qualification material.
I think it's important, and I am taking it super seriously. So it is a goal of mine, let's just say.
Good. Good.
So to get another blue badge, only not the bluest badge.
Yes.
You won't get the other blue badge because Microsoft has really cheaped out on the MVP merch. We used to get a whole kit, right, with a certificate that some people who need a lot of validation
this
would
have. This year
hang on
you
their
got
wall,
like
right
a
their,
little
right
me.
But do you, do you think that they don't give that for first time comers? Like, I thought that would still, surely they're still know. Giving that to the first, you know, as in when you first get awarded. Because, I mean, I haven't seen what, I haven't picked up my mail. It's,
my disc came, and as the driver gave it to me this year, it fell out the hole in the bag and just dropped on the floor. And that was my experience this year. I had to go scrambling for it underneath where I hang my coats.
I don't even know where the disc is.
It is interesting, isn't it? You know, the changes.
It just got this lousy envelope in the mail with this thing wrapped up in it. I was like, what the hell is? Oh, I know what this is. This thing used to travel in style.
Yeah.
Now it just travels in.
It used to travel with an instruction set. How?
But this it also is how you put the.
Really?
No joke. It used to come with a card. It used to come with a card that would go. That would go. And by the way, I'm not flexing anybody. I'm not flexing. But
I need to go over there.
It came with a card that said, it like literally had fingers and was like, that's how you do it.
To be honest though, Mark, I didn't realize that was there. I kept just shoving it up my nose. I'm glad I found that card in it.
I was just about to say that shows the quality of some of my piece, but
I feel inadequate bringing this out after Mark has, well, flexed.
Look at the time, my award.
We've come a long way since the 1 year when, I mean, now we just get the thing in a paper bag, but then there was the 1 year when Microsoft was so excited that they sent me two. So I actually have multiple of the same year. And it wasn't just two glass discs. It was two certificates. It was two little lapel magnets that I've never worn. And it's not that I need the lapel magnet. I just want to know that it's there.
No, but it used to come with friends. You also got like the little picnic blanket that we never used.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And like the boomerang or what was that? The little disc that we also never, the frisbee. There you go. And there was a speaker with a bad input. But anyway, but it was nice though.
The fast track stuff was pretty slick. I'm not going to lie. The fast track stuff was pretty slick.
Epic.
Yeah, that was slick.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
I have to show you guys one thing. This is very funny. I don't know if it's going to work. Let me see if I wake it up. Nope. He's asleep. Nicole bought me an AI, but he's gone to bed.
I saw the photo of this. This is so cool.
I saw on Twitter.
I want.
He's just gone to sleep, but when you pick him up, he gets angry. He goes, I'll let him sleep, and I'll show you guys tomorrow. Yeah.
Hey, guys, I know we've had some frivolity. We've got to draw to a close. I've got to go and deal with the situation, and I've got a customer appointment in 7 minutes. So let me go deal with that situation and then the customer appointment. This is the joys of little kids. Any final words? Will, you stayed on for the entire show. Congrats.
Yeah.
Thanks. Do I get an award?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Do I get a disc every time I come to a show?
You get a glass disc.
Yeah. Next time I see you, I'll give you your award.
That's a threat, and also slightly
reward, not award.
No, Mark, you best give me my trophy when I see you.
Yoo-hoo.
No, thank you. It's been great. I feel like a guest on this podcast now, so it's been fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, good to have you back, man. Good to have you back.
Yeah.
Oh, one last plug. Dynamics Minds.
Be sincere, Andrew. Jesus.
Yeah, Dynamics Minds. Man, be there. We're all going to be there. It is going to be an epic, fun time. I cannot wait. I've got the privilege of being one of the voters for the session track for Power Platform. Chris, I saw that you made a submission. Sorry, buddy, but...
I'm also one of the session selectors.
No, I actually put a must-have session because I've actually, the one session that you put forward, I've seen that session and it was epic. So I was like, this is a must show and tell because, yeah, after all, you've promised to send me the PowerPoint that many times and I still haven't got it.
So. I know, dude. I keep forgetting. I'll send it to you now, actually.
Thank you. Thank you.
Are we going to do a live podcast recording? At Dynamics Minds?
It's hard, right, to do it at an event. Like, it's because it's such a different technical setup. Like, I'm not personally a big fan because of the equipment that I have to take to make that a reality.
How about you get over yourself and figure it out, Mark?
Oh, no, I've got the equipment. It's just I have to carry that all the way around the globe to make that a reality for a podcast recording.
I'm hearing excuses. We want results.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean... Who's the guy who said you shouldn't do it yourself, just pay someone?
Very wise man.
Do you want $5, Andrew?
I already have $5 of your money, also known as 2.5 pounds, okay?
Yeah, also known as Monopoly money. I love it. Anything else, guys, before we go?
Love you all.
Any renaming of products that have popped up recently?
We're not allowed to say it, but yes.
Anybody moved on from Microsoft that we're not mentioning? No, we won't mention that.
Oh, low blow.
That'll be Anna.
I will say that on Monday, I think that I will catch up with Ryan Cunningham because he is coming to New Zealand, probably the first trip of his life. So, yeah, I hope to catch up with him in person.
I think that's going to be great, man. Please give him a squeeze for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm happy to hear you're out of cyclones now.
Yes.
As well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy. This is a real long goodbye.
Yes. Okay.
All right. Bye, guys. Love you.
Ciao. Bye, guys. Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Business Application MVP Mark Smith, otherwise known as the NZ365 Guy. If there's a guest you'd like to see on the show, please message me on LinkedIn. If you want to be a supporter of the show, please check out buymeacoffee.com/NZ365 Guy. Stay safe out there and shoot for the stars.